HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 184, recorded live Wednesday, October 14th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Microsoft Program Manager Scott Hunter.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here on the Microsoft campus today, actually on the third floor of Building 42, and I'm sitting down with Scott Hunter, Program Manager on the ASP.NET team, an individual who's obviously changed his name to Scott because you have to be named Scott to work for Microsoft.
Yes, if you want to be on the third floor of Building 42, your name must be Scott, but actually that's not true because now I'm actually Hunter. Because
people just call you Hunter.
There's so many Scotts on the floor that I am now Hunter.
That's pretty good. That's a cool name.
And so for people out there, you have to realize that Scott Guthrie's on this floor.
The goo. Are you the who? That could be a thing. We could make that a thing.
Actually, I'm Scott Who, actually, technically.
You are Scott Who, because I'm Scott Ha.
So we have Who, Ha, and Goo.
Oh, and then Phil Hack. When we were in Norway, we were the Ha Ha brothers.
Yes.
Which was lovely.
Crazy.
So you guys have been working really hard on Visual Studio 2010, and soon we're going to see Beta 2 at some point in the future. What are some of the things that are going into ASP.NET 4 that people should want to look for when Beta 2 comes out?
The main things that we're trying to look at for .NET 4 is we've really been trying to address pain points for customers. That's mm-hmm. probably been our number one item, is to go look at things like client IDs, view state, and what we render as markups. You know, there's lots of things that ASP.NET's rendered, and people go, I can't turn that markup off. Why is it rendering that stuff? So we did a lot of work in those three kind of pillar areas. But really, .NET 4 for our team has been trying to address customer pain points. It's been number one. All these legacy problems that have been around for a long time, and we've been trying to address a lot of those.
Now, these are legacy problems because .NET 3.5 and 3.0 and 2.0, those are all kind of in the same CLR, but some people, I think, have figured out by now that .NET 4 is going to be a side-by-side release. It's going to be a kind of a lateral thing. You can have 2.0 and 4.0 running on the same machine, right?
That's correct. So that's one of the benefits of .NET 4 is the fact that it's a brand new CLR, and just the act of installing it on your box will not break any application on your box, because all your applications on your box that are already running, .NET 2 or .NET 3.5, will continue to run those versions exactly as they are today. You'll have to manually go to a website and move it to .NET 4 if you want to start taking advantages of some of the features in .NET 4.
So they're not going to automatically upgrade my websites?
No.
Okay. So if I have a server, let's say, that runs 1.1, 2.0, and 4.0, I can do that. I can have them all running side by side.
That's correct. You could have one server, and it could have one web application running 1.0. It could have one running 2.0. It could have one running 4.0. And they would all not touch each other at all or have any side effects on each other. So
okay. Now, that's because of the side-by-side CLR aspect of things, because this is truly a separate installation of the CLR.
That's correct. So if you go look in your Windows Microsoft.NET directory under the frameworks, there'll be a framework directory in there, mm-hmm. and you'll see a brand new 4.0 directory with all the assemblies and stuff. And so those are only for 4.0, brand new.
Now, did that mean you got to break stuff? Like, does this mean like the ASP.NET team's like, woohoo, it's, you know, it's separate. We can break stuff now. Like stuff you wanted to break.
We would still wish we could break more stuff. That's one of the things that I think that frustrates us as employees of Microsoft is, one of the benefits for our customers is that we go out of our way not to break people's software. But at the same time, I think that hampers our library as well, where sometimes I feel like, God, we have these legacy problems that we can't fix because fixing them fundamentally is going to break break people's applications. But 4.0 does allow us a little bit more,
leeway?
Leeway is the right word, yeah, to break things, because obviously the installation of that on the box is not going to break any applications that are already on the box. And we have done a few breaking changes in .NET 4.
That's cool. I mean, I think that's great. I mean, I know that most applications that I've upgraded, I haven't had any problem. But if it is a breaking change and it's written down and there's some flag, then I can put it back into legacy mode. That's cool too.
Yeah, so we're actually going to have a document that we're going to try to get released right around the time Beta 2 comes out, which actually lists all these breaking changes and, the knobs and switches you can use to turn these things on and off. The biggest one I think will affect a customer moving forward is we added what we call rendering compatibility mode. And what this allows us to do is basically say, I want the application to render using the 4.0 rendering, versus I want the application to render using the 3.5 rendering. And we use this switch particularly to go and, there were some controls that we had that just emitted stuff without you asking. I mean, if you put an image, you're going to get a border equals zero.
Right. Emitted is a kind way to put it.
If,
right.
if you threw a table out there with a run equals server, so like in a grid view or something, you got like, once again, border equals zero.
Yeah.
Various little attributes were scattered all over the place and put on things and frustrate your customers when there's no way.
Yeah.
There physically is no way to turn these things off. And so, when you move an application to 4.0, by default, those things will all disappear. If you want to put them back on, you can go set in web config. You can go set rendering compatibility mode to 3.5, and you'll get that legacy rendering.
Okay. So for the most part, I won't mind that if these little kind of widgets, but in some obscure case, I might be counting on that weirdness.
Exactly. I expect some small, styling type, effects that people might have. Just
right.
Very small breaking things. It wouldn't be something huge where your whole, page snapped and skewed sideways or something like that. But I could see some, some little spacing issues and stuff like that.
Yeah, you just put the skewed sideways flag to false and everything. That's great. Now, I was talking to a couple of people for these Channel 9 videos that I was doing, and they were saying that you actually went through a bunch of really old controls, like the wizard control. And when I say really old, I didn't use them in the last couple of years, but some people will base their whole system on like the wizard control. But now it can emit clean markup.
Yeah. There was two areas that I think fundamentally might have confused developers today. We have when these controls came out, we actually had, these templates. So you could actually, templatize a control,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like I'm giving you the power to fully templatize your control.
Right.
But even in those cases, you would still find out that, I wrote my own template, but ASP.NET was kind enough to wrap it in a table with a TR and a TD.
Thank you, ASP.NET.
And, I don't want that. So, so we put in, some flags that turn that stuff off. So you can turn that off. And then we took some controls. The wizard's a great control. And one of the reasons we attacked the wizard is, because of another thing we did in 4.0, which is we have brand new, web form templates. And these brand new web form templates have, full, login capabilities.
So a template, just to be clear, that's when you say file new project.
Yes, I'm talking about a project template.
Okay.
In this case, we added project templates.
Okay.
And, when we go through the process of adding these new project templates, I want to support things like users being able to log in. I want people to create new accounts. We put these in the new, web form templates, project templates, because, these features can be complicated to turn on. So we thought we'd turn them on by default and you can remove them if you want. But, another active part of these new templates is we want them to pass, validation. So
right.
if you go to W3C and try to validate your website, we want these things to pass.
Yeah.
And so, part of the work that was done on these controls was explicitly because they are used in these new templates and we want them to validate properly. So, the new templates will actually show all these new flags in operation. We'll have the outer tables turned off.
Uh-huh.
We'll be using some of the new templates that allow you to templatize parts of these controls that you could not have templatized before.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll actually see quite a bit of that CSS work mm-hmm. in these new templates. You'll see the new menu control.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see the create user wizard, which is based on the wizard.
Yeah.
And you're going to see some login controls and stuff like that that are all utilizing these new features to emit really clean markup.
And it sounds like everybody had a part in that. Like I was talking to Phil yesterday and he went off and I think he was doing the menu control. So that was not like one person. That was like every PM took a piece to try to bring it into the present day.
Exactly. So it's a team thing here. So everybody goes, I think sometimes the outside people go, oh, Phil is the MVC guy.
Right.
He was
working on web forms controls.
Phil works on web forms. I mean, he worked on data annotations. He's worked on, the menu control, and various other aspects of ASP.NET. So in fact, comically enough, Phil was one of the guys that was actually responsible for coming up with a list of things that were wrong with the controls.
Well, Phil's pretty hardcore. He likes his markup clean.
He does.
And he probably wouldn't be satisfied unless it was fixed. So one of the things that was really cool that I saw was that David Ebo showed me a .NET 2 app that did things kind of the older style way. It did like old style data access, inline SQL, spit it into a data grid. But it was the way we wrote applications 5 years ago. And then he added dynamic data to it. Now, a lot of people have looked at dynamic data and they think it's like, oh, look, free admin site. And they thought of dynamic data as being like a pillar in the sense of web forms, MVC, dynamic data. But he just went and said, enable dynamic data. on this grid view, and then, and he didn't have to add anything. He didn't go in web config. I mean, he didn't add any references. So it kind of turned my perception of what dynamic data is on its head. So what's going on?
Well, let me call that. That makes me want to call out a couple points.
Okay.
So one of the things you're going to see in 4.0 or .NET 4, I should say, the O is not supposed to be
there.
Yeah,
we're not supposed to say that actually. That's funny that you mentioned. It's .NET 4, people.
So when you see .NET 4, one of the things that we did is we minified webconfig. So if you do an empty project, you're going to see a webconfig that's got about 10 lines of webconfig now.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the things that we did in the process of doing that is we took a lot of the assemblies that we think you might want by default and moved them into root config. And so things like dynamic data, routing, that used to have to go, AJAX that used to go and have to put in webconfig,
right,
are now in your root config. And the fact that we can put them in root config then allows me to sit there and say, hey, I want to go enable this for any website. There's this new switch called Enable Dynamic Data. And let me kind of tell you the story about how we got there was
mm-hmm.
we were sitting in a room with Scott Guthrie one day, the goo. And he asked a question. He goes, hey, so, you know, we've got these rich data controls like grid views and details views and stuff. Did we ever fix these things so if I put bad data in, they just work? Because it's kind of funny. We have these controls and, you know, they do paging, they do editing. They do inserting, deleting.
Sure.
They do all these common operations, but you go in there and put a bad value in a cell,
mm-hmm.
press return, and you get the yellow screen of death.
Right.
Telling you that
input string is not in the correct format.
Exactly.
Or whatever. Yeah.
And we're like, you know, that's one of the things that dynamic data does. And so what we did is we added a new switch called Enable Dynamic Data.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that on any of the major controls, form view, details view, grid view, list view, and just turn it on. And by doing that, you'll get automatic validation for the types in your control.
Mm-hmm.
And it means you could also use all the annotations that we have around, you know, validation. So if you want to, you know, specify a range, specify that something is required, stuff like that, you can go put those annotations that we introduced in 3.5 SP1 on your stuff, and they'll just automatically work.
Yeah. And this was really interesting because he did this with data that wasn't really object-oriented. I mean, he didn't have, like, an object for a product. He just had basically straight SQL, old school style, into a grid, but it worked, right? I mean, he had a system that worked. He didn't want to break it. He didn't want to convert it. He just wanted to augment.
Yeah, that was some feedback we took after 3.5 SP1 was we didn't get exactly as much use of dynamic data that we thought our customers would actually, you know, be using it more than they're using it today. And I think part of the reason that is because if you wanted to use dynamic data, you had to start with a brand new project template.
Yeah.
And then you had to be using Link to SQL or Entity Framework. We only supported those two models because
right.
those are ORMs, and dynamic data wanted a full object model. And so when we started looking at .NET 4, we're like, how can we enable dynamic data for everybody? So I can just take my existing 3.5 app or my 2.0 application,
mm-hmm.
add one line of code, and get the benefits of dynamic data.
Yeah.
So I no longer have to have a dynamic data directory. I no longer have to have an object model, be it Link to SQL or Entity Framework. I could be binding directly to an array of items,
yeah.
or it could be something from a SQL data source. Pretty much, it doesn't care. And so that was one of our goals, was basically to be able to say, hey, let's make an existing application better and not have them have to go through any hoops at all.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott coming at you from another place and time. No doubt you probably bump into testing tasks now and then in your work. And you know, writing functional tests is probably not your favorite thing. It's kind of difficult, takes time, and the results can be dubious. Well, get ready to start liking tests thanks to Telerik with the new WebEye testing framework. Building web automation tests is a breeze. You've got code automation with advanced ASP.NET AJAX and Silverlight applications. You can write a single test, have it executed against multiple browsers at once. You benefit from a rich API. There's link support, integration with Visual Studio unit testing, also NUnit, XUnit, and MBUnit. Not to mention the free wrappers for Telerik RAD controls for ASP.NET, AJAX, and Silverlight, all shipping with Telerik's new testing tool. One of the best features, the WebEye testing framework, which is developed by Art of Test, is it's absolutely free. If you've already got hooked on WebEye testing framework, start using it right away. Go to Telerik.com for more info. Thanks a lot. You know, and that actually brings me to another point that I've long complained in presentations about the file new project dialog always has this sense of like, all right, pick your vocation. How are you going to do this? Right. And once you hit okay, you've made your decision, right? File new project, web forms app, or file new project, dynamic data app. It's like, okay, well, you've just headed in that direction and you can never go back, but now you can turn on MVC, dynamic data web forms in the same app, which kind of got me thinking about it's more about ASP.NET. Like there's like, I'm going to sound cheesy marketing like, but it's like .NET 4 has got a greater emphasis on ASP.NET itself and not these kind of subsystems, I guess is the lack of a better word. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I would actually, first off, I think you bring up a great point. And I think we still fail on that file new project.
It should be a checkbox.
Exactly. That was something we wanted to address in VS 2010 and did not get around to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to be able to say that you just say, hey, I want to start a new website. And then you get a dialog box that says, here, enable the features that you wish to use.
I want a little ADO.NET data services and a little of this. I want a cafeteria.
Exactly. I mean, it should be and you should be able to bring that up after the fact. So, you know, just because I didn't know I wanted MVC when I first started, I can later on go, hey, I want MVC and turn that on.
So that's, you've heard us. You've heard us saying this.
We know. We actually have a feature that we were prototyping called, I think it was called Web Enablement.
Web Enablement?
Yes. Something crazy like that but basically the idea is basically what you're saying. You know, I would get a bunch of checkboxes and I could launch it multiple times. And so I don't, as you said, it feels draconian now. You make this decision.
Yeah.
And then if you want to if you want to change your decision, start over.
Sorry. Yeah. And, you know, even now you have to, if you want to get that dynamic data folder, where does it come from? Right. You have to bring it in from another project. You know, anytime a developer has to hit beyond compare or WinDiff, to figure out what's going on, it kind of, it's a problem. But now you can have an application that is all of those things. It's like an MVC app and it's a dynamic data app and a web forms app, kind of all at the same time.
Yeah.
Do you see like more people doing hybrids? Cause I get email, you probably do too, a couple of times a week where someone says, you know, please, Mr. Hanselman, we're about to start a new project. Should we use MVC or web forms? And I cannot answer that question. I need to know about the kinds of data that you're going to be doing, the kinds of interactions, how important is testability? I mean, you know the whole list, the standard list. What percentage of people do you think are going to be using hybrids?
I think it is increasing. It's interesting that you bring that point up because I actually just 3 or 4 days ago actually had a customer come to me with that exact question. They'd actually built an MVC application and they put a dynamic data back end on it for their administration.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're asking, is this a valid way to build applications?
I've done that, actually. It's funny that you mentioned that. I did a project with a friend of mine where the whole back end was dynamic data web forms and the whole front end was MVC just because it was faster. But then I realized if I looked at some of the stuff in MVC 2 and done some of the code generation, I could have potentially generated the back end. And then I got a little paralyzed because there's so many different options on the way I could have achieved the same goal with a number of different technologies. I had to decide whether or not it was speed of initial implementation versus, you know, potentially how hard it was to maintain. It's hard to make these decisions.
Yeah, that's and I'd actually argue that's something we're not the best at actually describing to our customers. What technology choice should you make at the right times? I mean, that's something that I think we still need to get better at is when should I choose Link to SQL or Entity Framework versus writing my SQL myself? When should I choose MVC over web forms? Or should I just put them both in the same project? I mean, there's all these questions, and I hope in the future we can get better at providing guidance on the path you go down. But as you said, that works great. You can put all these things together in the same project, and things will work perfect together. So, I recommend...
You're bringing stuff in, though, from like jQuery ship with MVC. But I noticed, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but I was peeking over your shoulder when you went and found a new project on an early build here, and I saw a jQuery inside of WebForms project. You went and found a new project and jQuery's in there, because I guess we're shipping it anyway.
Yeah, why
don't we give the love to WebForms as well?
Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, you mentioned earlier that it looks like we have these like pillars of, technologies like MVC or dynamic data or WebForms. And one of the things that I like to say, we try not to be pillared. It might look that way just because of the way we release things.
Yeah.
You know, MVC was released as an out-of-band release. Dynamic data was part of a service pack.
Right.
So that kind of holds our hands on how we're allowed to build a framework.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, .NET 4 comes down the path, and then suddenly we can take routing that used to be this thing that kind of MVC had, put it directly in the framework, give full support to it for web forms as well. So now you can use routing against all those things.
Right.
We've taken the ideas. Dynamic data brought this notion of having attributes from data annotations that you could put on your object model, and we would do validation. Well, MVC2 is coming down the pipe, and wow, it takes advantage of these same things as well. So we're trying to blur things together and make it feel like more of we're building a platform than we are building pillars of stuff. So the idea is ASP.NET, you know, enables you to do dynamic data type things, whether you're using MVC, you're using web forms, And there's some other work going on where you can actually use these same mechanisms inside of Silverlight as well. So it's not about
Really?
It's not about a particular technology. It's about being consistent.
Well, so there's a whole class of people out there that maybe want to do things a little differently. They maybe want more classic ASP style. Like, what kind of stuff could I offer a classic ASP person moving forward?
Yeah, so, you know, if you look beyond .NET 4, you look beyond Visual Studio 2010, you might ask, you know, what is the ASP.NET team thinking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think that we've got a really cool platform, MVC, for the pattern developer that wants full control of markup, separation of concerns. You know, MVC is a great solution for that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an enterprise guy and you're building applications quickly, we've got a great solution with web forms for that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the areas that I think we've kind of left behind and we need to go look at again is, hey, I'm just a simple guy and I want to throw a website together really quickly. I know HTML really well, you know, but I don't know a bunch about controls and I don't know about separation of concerns and stuff like that. How do I get started?
Yeah, I know my for loops and I know my if statements and I know HTML great. I just like to get to the site and maybe talk to a database, you know, for my little league or something.
Exactly. So I would say one of the pillars that we're focusing on moving forward is simplicity.
Okay.
And this is saying, you know, hey, I want to grab an app, drop it in a directory and have it work. You know, I don't want to have a configuration file.
Less moving parts.
You know, I don't know what page directives are. I don't know what, code behind is. When I first look at one of these ASP, files and I see, you know, public partial class. I'm like, what is all that stuff?
Maybe I don't even want to compile.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure you did this. I know I did it, you know, years ago was classic ASP. So I'm not saying we're going to go back to classic ASP, but we are looking at how we can provide a simpler, developer experience for, the other audiences.
That's cool. So that's something that potentially you're thinking about going forward beyond .NET 4. Is there anything else in .NET 4 you didn't maybe get in that you wish you did that you're going to come back to?
There's always stuff in .NET 4 that we wish we got in and didn't get back
to. Well, I mean, I'm sure there is. There's a backlog that goes on forever. I'm sure we can't talk too much about. But what about this? Is there a new respect for web forms? Because, you know, a lot of the people are saying that maybe the ASP.NET team's moved on and it's all about MVC now. We talked about the better markup and stuff like that for web forms developers. But, I mean, development is continuing in earnest, right?
Yeah, I mean, you really see this. I mean, we have a white paper up on the ASP.NET site. If you just Bing, you know, what's new in .NET 4, it'll take you to a white paper that'll show you a lot of the things we're doing in .NET 4, and I think it'll show that we did a lot of work for web forms, addressing the common customer complaints in web forms. That is something we always look at, is common customer pain points. We got some stuff in. You know, you'll see stuff in the future. And as I said, you know, one of the things that you noticed yourself was that you saw our technologies kind of sliding across all these different areas. So it's not just focusing on one particular area. So I think what you're going to see in the future is you're going to see us building, you know, maybe helpers that, but they'll be technology agnostic. You know, you'll use the same helper whether you're in web forms, whether you're in MVC, whether you're in Ajax.
That's a really good example. So like the Ajax stuff, I was talking to Stephen Walther and he was showing me some Ajax that was going on with the, I guess they just released Preview 6.
Preview 6.
And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I was like, yeah, but I'm not really into the whole ASP.NET Ajax thing. And he says, oh no, but this is all JavaScript. It's a client-side library.
Exactly.
And it just kind of took, I was like, wait a second, well, what about the whole Ajax Microsoft thing? And he's like, well, no, but look how I can make a Microsoft Ajax control using jQuery to do it. And that was really kind of cool to see the jQuery syntax to create a Microsoft Ajax control toolkit control. I don't know. The whole Microsoft openness thing is creeping me out. Can we be more closed, please? Because it's making me uncomfortable.
I think you're going to see us get more open. But you bring up a good point. I think, you know, if somebody does go to CodePlex and downloads that Ajax preview, you'll find that most of the samples in there aren't ASP.NET samples.
Yeah. They're .HTML files. Yeah.
There's nothing, you know, restricting you to use ASP.NET to use those things. And so one of the things that I think that, you know, we've also heard from our customers is, you know, we've got this great Ajax control toolkit out there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear the word Ajax control toolkit,
that
brings the notion of, oh, I can't use that because I'm not using controls. I'm using HTML files, or I'm using MVC.
Yep.
And the reality is, all that stuff is actually usable from these other technologies. We just haven't documented it that way.
And that's where we kind of bring the whole discussion forward, is that prescriptive guidance, explaining to people how to do things, how it fits together. I feel like, and I've said this to people privately, and I guess I'll say it publicly in the podcast, that we're kind of starting to get our technology thing under control here. We're starting to think, I was saying at actually in Mexico last week, I was talking to a large soda pop bottling company, and I said that Microsoft with 2008 and even more with 2010 is starting to get the Lego pieces the right size, right? Not too big, not too small, right? You know, you've got technologies that finally work together cleanly and with Astoria, the ADO.NET data services, talking into MS Ajax and binding into, you know, and working with MVC. All kind of white box technologies. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing hidden. There's no magic. It's not like, you know, drag a grid over and then poof, Northwind database. And then we walk off the stage and drop the mic. It's more, that we're giving people a collection of Legos that are appropriately sized using open technologies without any secrets behind it. And it's like, now I can build a little of this, a little of that. And it's freaking people out because they want prescriptive guidance.
And there's more coming. I mean, that's exactly what the programmer we expect in the future is. Hey, I know HTML and I want to use some coding in it. I don't want to have, I don't want to put something on my page and go, what does it do? Why does
right.
it do it?
And, right. And what's this opaque blob here?
Or as you said, the worst case is the demoware. Where,
yeah.
Hey, I've got this demo. It's like, yeah, I drag this thing here. I wire this thing to it. I walk off the stage, and then you go, I want to customize it. Well, good luck.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, that's great. Can I sort those columns? No, sorry. Yeah, totally. Well, cool. Well, I really appreciate you sitting down with me today and having a chat about ASP.NET 4, and hopefully we'll see Beta 2 soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.